December 8th, 1854. Not exactly a date that jumps out at you, right? But it was a big day for the Roman Catholic Church. It's the day they made that big pronouncement about the Immaculate Conception of Mary.
Yeah, a pretty significant moment in Catholic history for sure.
And here we are the very next day, December 9th, all set for another deep dive.
And today we're going all the way back to the Reformation, looking at how things have, well, evolved between Protestants and Roman Catholics. It's a really interesting story, full of twists and turns, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. It's not exactly a simple relationship, is it?
No, not at all.
So we're working from a lecture from a church history course, Reformation to the Present. The lecture zeroes in on modern theologies and how those have shaped this whole interaction between, well, these two massive branches of Christianity, right?
That's right.
Okay. So, listener, if you're tuning in, here's the plan. We're going to try and give you a clearer picture of this whole Protestant Catholic thing, how it all started, where things shifted, what they're talking about now, and of course, you know, where they still disagree.
Because, let's be honest, there are still plenty of those, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So back to the beginning. The Reformation, it
Yeah.
wasn't just a little disagreement. I mean, these were some really big fundamental issues that divided them, right?
Oh, yeah. It was a huge rift, and it all stemmed from some pretty deep theological differences. Probably the most basic one, and the one that underpins so much else, is the question of authority. Where does authority ultimately reside?
Right. Because for Protestants, it's the Bible alone.
That's it. Sola scriptura, as they
Yeah.
say, scripture alone. But for Roman Catholics, it's a bit more complicated.
Because they add tradition to the mix.
Exactly. Scripture and the tradition of the church. So it's not just the Bible itself. It's the Bible as it's been interpreted and passed down through the centuries by the church, right?
It's like, well, maybe think of it this way. For Protestants, the Bible's the Constitution, right? And that's it.
That's a good analogy.
But for Catholics, it's the Constitution, plus all the legal precedents and interpretations that have built up over time.
I like that. Yeah, that makes it clearer.
And then, of course, we have Mary. I mean, even if you don't know much about all this, you probably know that Protestants and Catholics view Mary a bit differently.
Yeah, that's a big one. The way they see Mary, her role, her importance in salvation, it's a major point of divergence. And then there's the whole question of church leadership, you know, the role of the Pope, the hierarchy, all that stuff.
And that was a sticking point right from the
Oh,
start.
absolutely. Huge disagreement there. And even the canon of scripture, like which books actually belong in the Bible, they had different views on that right from the get-go.
So yeah, these weren't just little quibbles. Pretty different starting points, to say the least. But history doesn't just stop there.
No, things change. Always do.
And our source lecture highlights four big changes that really shook things up in the Protestant-Catholic relationship.
Okay, yeah, let's get into those.
Number one, and this one sounds like a real game changer, Vatican II.
Yeah, Vatican II. That was the Second Vatican Council back in the early 60s, 1962 to 1965. And it really did have a radical impact on how the Roman Catholic Church related to
I
Protestants.
mean, just how radical was it? It
Yeah.
was more than just tweaking a few
Oh,
things.
it was way more than that. This was a fundamental shift in the whole Catholic self-understanding, how they saw themselves in relation to, well, other Christians, you know, what they started calling separated brethren.
Okay, separated brethren. Interesting term.
There's this great story about Pope John Tecate III, the pope who called the council. A lot of folks saw him as a caretaker pope, you know, someone who wouldn't really rock the boat.
Yeah.
But when he decided to convene Vatican II, wow, it was like he opened up a floodgate of reform and dialogue. It was a major turning point.
So before Vatican II, the Catholic Church was basically saying, we've got the truth, and that's that.
Pretty much, yeah.
But after, they were more open to engaging with other Christian traditions.
Much more open. And that really changed the whole dynamic.
A huge shift for an institution that old, right? Okay, so that's Vatican II. Huge.
Huge.
Now, number two on the list of big changes is John F. Kennedy becoming president.
Yeah, that was 1961, and it was pretty significant for how people viewed Catholicism, especially in the US.
Because he was the first Catholic president.
Right.
And America was, and still is, largely Protestant.
Exactly. So his election really challenged a lot of the old prejudices and fears that people had about Catholics, and it helped people see Catholics as, you know, normal Americans.
Normal American.
Yeah, you know, loyal citizens who could be trusted with political power.
Yeah. So it was a symbolic breakthrough, definitely.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
All right. The third change that the lecture talks about is this idea of ecumenism in the trenches.
Ah, yes, that's a good one.
I like that phrase. It's kind of catchy, right?
Yeah, it's very evocative, isn't it?
But what does it actually mean?
So basically, it means that Protestants and Catholics are finding common ground on a lot of moral and ethical issues. They're working together to address real-world problems.
So less theology and more action.
Kind of, yeah. It's like they're saying, look, we may disagree on some finer points of doctrine, but we can still agree on the importance of things like marriage and family.
Yeah, because both traditions really value those, right?
Right. And on issues like abortion, they might approach it from different theological angles, but there's definitely a lot of overlap in terms of their views on the sanctity of life.
Okay, so even if their reasons are slightly different, they end up on the same side of a lot of these issues.
Exactly. And you see it in things like their opposition to pornography and the sex trade. They might come at it from different theological perspectives, but they're united in their opposition.
United in action, even if not in every detail of belief.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Okay, that's ecumenism in the trenches. Now, the fourth change is a little more surprising, and it's something that people don't always talk about. The lecture mentions this trend of evangelicals who are Protestant becoming Catholic or Eastern Orthodox.
Yeah, that's a fascinating trend. And it's happening, you know, especially in the West.
Okay, so why are some evangelicals making that switch?
Well, the lecture suggests a few possible reasons. One is that some evangelicals are drawn to the deeper historical roots of Catholicism and Orthodoxy.
Right. They got a lot of history, don't they?
Centuries of it. And for some people, that's appealing, especially if they're coming from a Protestant denomination that's, you know, relatively new. They might be looking for that sense of continuity with the ancient church.
Connection to the past.
Exactly. Yeah. And then there's the appeal of the worship experience.
You mean like the liturgy and rituals and all that?
Yeah, all that. The smells and bells, as some people say. But really, it's about a sense of the sacred, of mystery, of something bigger than yourself.
And some evangelicals find that missing in their own churches.
That's the idea. They're looking for something that feels more, well, transcendent.
Okay, so history and worship. Two big draws.
Two big ones, yeah. The lecture even mentions this guy, Christian Smith, a pretty well-known Protestant professor who eventually became Catholic, so it's not just, you know, folks on the fringes.
A serious scholar, not someone you'd expect to make that kind of move.
Exactly.
But wait, it's not all one-way traffic, is it? The lecture points out that there's a movement in the opposite direction, too, especially in South America.
That's right. Down there, you see a lot of Catholics becoming evangelical or Pentecostal. And that's interesting, right?
Yeah. Why is that happening?
Well, the lecture suggests it might be because they're looking for a more, how should I put it, a more alive kind of faith.
Right.
You know, they might feel like the traditional Catholic Church is a bit too, I don't know, stuffy or formal. And they see these newer churches as more dynamic, more focused on personal experience.
A more emotional kind of faith.
Maybe, yeah. Or maybe they're just looking for something that feels more relevant to their lives. Whatever the reason, it shows that the religious landscape is always changing, even in places where Catholicism has been dominant for centuries.
Yeah, definitely not a simple story. So we've talked about those big historical shifts, those four big changes that have really reshaped the relationship. But beyond that, there are all these dialogues happening. I mean, it's pretty impressive how much Protestants and Catholics are actually talking to each other these days.
It really is. There are formal dialogues happening between the Roman Catholic Church and all sorts of Protestant denominations.
Like who? Give me some examples.
Well, there's a dialogue with Anglicans, which makes sense given their shared history. But then you've got Lutherans, too. And that's pretty significant, right?
Yeah, because Luther was the one who kicked off the whole Reformation thing.
Right. And then, get this, they're even talking to Seventh-day Adventists.
Seventh-day Adventists.
Yeah, which is surprising because they have some pretty different beliefs, even compared to other Protestants.
Yeah, they do. So it seems like the Catholic Church is really serious about engaging with other Christians, even those they disagree with on quite a few things.
Yeah, it seems that way. And that's a good thing, right?
Definitely.
Mm.
But even with all this dialogue, there are still some major sticking points, right? Yeah. Places where they just can't seem to agree.
Oh, yeah. Plenty of those.
So let's talk about those. What are some of the big issues where they're still at an impasse?
Well, Mary is still a big one.
Still?
Yep. The lecture kind of suggests that Catholics may have gone a bit overboard in their emphasis on Mary.
Okay.
And Protestants maybe swung too far in the other direction, downplaying her importance.
So maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Who knows? But it's still a point of contention. And then, of course, there's that fundamental question of authority.
Right. scripture alone versus scripture and tradition.
That's it. And that's not a small difference. It affects how they interpret the Bible, how they make decisions, how they structure their churches, everything really.
And speaking of church structure, that's another big one, right? The whole papacy thing. Protestants just don't buy it.
Nope. They don't see any biblical basis for it. And they definitely don't accept the Pope's claim to be the successor of Peter.
So the whole hierarchy of the Catholic Church is a no-go for Protestants.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then there are all those practical things that flow out of these theological differences. Like celibacy for priests, for example. That's still a thing in the Catholic Church.
Yeah, mostly. There are a few exceptions, like some Anglican priests who convert.
But for the most part, Catholic priests are supposed to be celibate, and Protestant pastors, well, they're not.
Right. And then there's the ordination of women.
Yeah, that's another big one.
A lot of Protestant denominations ordain women, but the Catholic Church still says no. And that's a source of a lot of tension, especially for women who feel called to ministry.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And finally, there are the sacraments. Protestants usually recognize just two, baptism and communion.
Right. But Catholics have seven.
Seven. And not only that, they also have different understandings of what those sacraments actually are, what they do, how they work. So yeah, even after all this dialogue, there's still a lot that separates them.
A lot of history there. It's amazing to think that a relationship that started, what, 500 years ago is still so dynamic. I mean, it's been a roller coaster ride, hasn't it?
It really has. Periods of intense conflict followed by these attempts at reconciliation. And yet those core differences remain.
So as we wrap this up, what are the big takeaways here? What do we want our listener to walk away with?
Well, I think the main takeaway is that the Protestant-Catholic relationship is a living thing. It's constantly evolving, shaped by all these historical forces, cultural trends, grassroots movements.
And not just some dusty old history book, right?
Exactly. It's happening right now. And while they've found common ground on some important issues, those fundamental theological differences, you know, about authority, church structure, sacraments, those are still there.
So they're working together in some areas, but they're still figuring things out in others.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay, so that's the story so far.
But the story's not over yet, right?
Nope, far from it. So here's something for you to think about, listener. Given everything we've talked about, all these historical developments and ongoing dialogues, what do you think the future holds for this relationship? What will happen next? Will they find a way to bridge those fundamental differences, or will they just agree to disagree? And what about the bigger picture? How will all this affect Christian theology and interfaith relations in general? Just something to ponder as you go about your day.